shall we go for the next two? The next two, letting go. So, as I mentioned, the next two are beginning and before. So, we have what we see after, and that's a letting go. Then, when we see during, that's a letting go. And then, as we practice more, as we become more aware, we start to really understand the pattern. I think this is, I think, something really important in terms of, like, it's impermanent. It doesn't happen all the time. So then the question is, when does it happen? How does it happen? And I think then, to bring the creative awareness to the trigger, what's the trigger, what's the circumstances, and could there be some contributing factors? And then that helps us to be more just at the beginning. So instead to be in the middle or to be after, after a while we can see very early on. Because I think there is a difference to seeing something early on than when it's in the middle or when it's after. And so, in a way, it's becoming much more aware that I'm not always doing this. This is, I think, the first thing which has to go, in a way. But if you start to see the trigger, the condition, the contributing factor, then you really, in a way, let go of the, it's always like that. And then you can start to engage. We've, since the trigger has triggered, since the conditions are there, and possibly some contributing factor, how the, because of that, the pattern will have still a little power. So how can I help myself not to go in the direction where generally I go? And I think so, I see the before, the beginning, as a moment of really creativity. To really creatively look at how could I help myself in this situation. And that's when we realize, actually, that although some patterns make us suffer, they're not as powerful that we think they are. This is what is weird. In the grip of it, they seem to be really powerful. But if you, upon seeing the trigger and the condition, you do something else, actually you are basically de-triggering the pattern. And I saw that with myself. Many years ago, the one first time I really saw it clearly was when I was, many years ago, and Stephen used to travel to teach. And he would go, and within 3 days I would get in a funk. And then he would phone, and I was kind of unpleasant on the phone. So it happens once, it happened twice, and the third time I thought, what's the matter? What goes on? What happened? Because I only did it when he went away. So I thought, okay, he goes away this time. I am really, I'm really going to watch, but not in a negative way or intense way. It was just, okay, let's see when it happens. So that was the first thing. How soon does it happen? And first day, fine. Second day, fine. And then the third day, I saw it. I saw that because it was not there, it kind of created an unpleasant feeling tone, which then gave rise to a thought. And the thought sent me into that negative loop. Poor me, nobody loves me, whatever. And then I saw the thought. I thought, that's it. The circumstances is not there, the trigger is a thought. So of course, what triggers the thought is a feeling tone, but let's say the thought. And I saw the thought. I thought, okay, you have the thought, but I don't need to go down the loop, do I? But if I don't want to go down the loop, I need to have something to help me not go down the loop. So I went for a walk, I read a book, I talked to a friend. And what was for me very interesting was that I only had to do it twice and it was gone. Stephen could go away, nothing happened. To such degree, I can't remember the phrase which was such a trigger. I mean, now it totally disappeared from my mind. I could not even tell you what it was, when actually it was so powerful and it was so painful to be triggered by that thought. And that's why I thought, oh, yeah, if we don't identify with it, if we don't amplify it, then you go that way, you don't feed it, and then it loses its power. I mean, I had a smaller experience when, early day of my marriage again, I would sit in meditation, and suddenly I would think, oh, Stephen is going to die, oh, what am I going to do? And, you know, so I would do this, all kind of scenario about what I was going to do, da, da, da. And then I would come out of the meditation and look at you, oh, Stephen, what's the matter with you? What's going on? Very boldly and all that. And I thought, well, yeah, this is weird. Because I thought, well, he's not dead yet, you know. why can't I enjoy him while he's here? So then, you know, next meditation, I thought, okay. Again, very likely could have been a feeling tone. And then the thought, if Stephen dies. And then I thought, wait a minute. Let's change it to, what if I die? And I thought, well, I don't care. I die. I'm gone. It's not my problem. And the thing totally went. After that, I never thought about it again. And so, in a way, with this beginning, it's kind of looking. In some instances, we know the condition. I mean, for myself, I'm really aware at the moment that going to airports is a little, you know, can get stressed, especially if things go a little funny. And so, prepare. Before I go now to airports and think, generally, I prepare myself to kind of different way. Otherwise, take action. I think, you know, like one of the contributing factor to a lot of our habits is tiredness. You're tired, you're more easily impatient, irritable, confused. So, I mean, do we are tired, so then we look for somebody, I used to look for somebody to be irritated with. You know, until I thought, well, they've not done anything. Why? But I'm irritated. And I realized it's not because of them, it's because of me. So I thought, but because I'm tired. And so now I rest quite a bit when I'm tired, and then I'm much nicer. So, yeah, that's an easy thing to do. Or creative changing of groove. I think this is really to see that at times the trigger, when it's still powerful enough, in a way you cannot just say, let go of the thought, let go of the trigger, because it still has this power. And that's why I think, you know, can we do something creative which engages us in such a way that it moves the groove? Because our reactive pattern are grooves. And actually, when we do meditation, we try to create a different groove, a wise and compassionate groove, a quiet and clear groove. That's what we're doing in meditation. Instead of going this way, we say, hey, how about going that way? And then that creates a different energy in a way, a different direction. And so I think to see that sometimes there is this idea with the mindfulness, even if it's painful, I must go inside it, deep in it. But a lot of the time it doesn't help. I'm not saying every time, sometimes it doesn't. But to creatively do something else. I mean, this is something I take care of my mother, which lives downstairs, and then sometimes things go well, and then sometimes things are a little difficult, you know, and I go too bad, with a little feeling tone, a little unpleasant feeling tone, and then I can see the mind, oops, kind of, you know, starting to kind of slightly being triggered by this feeling tone. And then I know if I don't do anything, I'm not going to sleep well, because it's going to trigger thought. And so generally what I do is I put the light on, I read a book which I'm fairly sure is going to put me to sleep, often like a police book or something of that nature. And then after half an hour, it kind of de-grooved me somewhere else. And then I can sleep, and then the next day I can be, you know, ready to help her in any way I can. So I think this is a thing about insomnia. I know some people have insomnia sometimes. And I mean, for some years I had, it was hard to sleep. But I could see that to worry about not sleeping would stop me from sleeping. And I thought, that's not helping. And so what I would do is, don't worry about sleeping. For 2 years, I did not worry about not sleeping. That's why now I don't worry about not sleeping. Recently, I was not sleeping well, though the night, well, I read the manuscript of a friend. That was something useful to do. Then next night, I might sleep better, who knows. But to, instead of worrying, to just say, okay, I can rest. I can rest the body. I can be aware of the breath. I can be aware of the body on the bed. And personally, I find it very useful. So in a way, to what is it I can creatively do here? How can I creatively help myself in terms of this triggering conditions? So I would say in the beginning, the step is really do something. Don't just, I mean, you can just sit there and then you'll be in the middle. But if you are in the letting go of the beginning, it's very much about, in a way, saying, I can try to do something. I can experiment. I can creatively try to do something. I think this is what this stage is about. And then you have the last stage, which is before. And I think this stage is possible when we build up enough power of creative awareness. I feel often when we do meditation, often we have this great hope to have fantastic meditative state. You might get them or not, depending on different conditions. But something, no matter what happens, you do when you meditate, is that it be formally or informally, you build up the power of creative awareness. And at some point, it's strong enough that then you can actually see yourself before you go into the pattern. And then you can, in a way, let go of going into the pattern. And what is interesting at that moment, of that moment of before, like you have the trigger, you have the condition. This once happened to me. I had this very bad habit from a young age, that if somebody hurt me in any way, that was it. I would not talk to them, speak to them, look at them, I would ignore them. For as long as the upset lasted, and then it went, and then I was friendly again. And I did this when I was younger, it lasted longer. I think in English you might call it sulking, possibly. And I still did it, but much less. And also it lasted less long after I started to do meditation. And then one day, somebody hurt me in some way, or I saw that hurt me in some way. And so in the morning, I go into the kitchen to prepare breakfast, we're in a community, and I see the person. And in seeing the person, I can see the kind of the sulking feeling, the ignoring, the protecting feeling, not there, but on the way to. And at that moment, I question, do I have to do this? And something within me, you know, it says, why not do something else? And at that moment, there was an amazing fear. And I realized why we don't change. why we don't let go is because we prefer the pain of the known than the fear of the unknown. But I went beyond the fear, and I turned to the person and I smiled. And then I felt such ease that I thought, why did not I do this before? But I could not do it before because I was stuck. And then I never did it again before I know the reason. I never did it again because only then, after all these years, I understood how painful the habit, not only had been with me, but more for the other person. Imagine being ignored days on end. I mean, it's a more painful thing you can do to anybody. But I never seen it that way. I just saw it, I'm protecting myself from the bad person out there. And then I saw, I could not do it anymore. I just could not do it, to do something which would be so painful for somebody else. And then because of that, people still did things which sometimes upset me, but then I became more creative. How can I be with this person within this condition? So it was not addressing the problem, but looking at it in a different way. And finally, one day I kept getting in trouble with this person. I decided to say, what's the matter here? So I said, oh, let's talk. And I said, you know, what's the matter? We keep getting into trouble. And she said, you are just like my sister. Oh, then for me, it was a great relief. I thought, great, I understand, it's okay. I can't help it. And after that, it was so much easier. But because I had questioned, why should I do this again? I had questioned, what is going on? Can I do something about it? And so to me, this is in a way, here, we're really moving toward wisdom and compassion. That the power of creative awareness, that in a way I would say, letting go, the basis of letting go, is really not rejecting something, eradicating something. But the root of letting go is wisdom and compassion. Wisdom and compassion toward ourselves. Wisdom and compassion toward others. To me, that's the root of letting go. Because often there is this idea that letting go can only be attained if I have this great equanimity. And often we have this impression, equanimity, I'm just on my little clouds and nothing can bother me. But I don't think that's what it is about. I think it's more about if we really understand the pain that the habit caused to ourselves and others, if we understand that we're not stuck. I think we feel stuck. This is what is interesting. We feel stuck. We identify, I am stuck. I am never going to change. This is never going to change. And I think the power of creative awareness is actually starting to help us to say, where do I have to do this again? Could not I do something else? So in a way, it's creating a space where we can start to think of doing something else and having the courage to do something else. And I think, in a way, let go is about having the courage to do something else. When we can have the courage, of course, we cannot always be in the situation when we have. And so what I wanted to suggest as a practice this afternoon was actually the practice of questioning. And this is quite different from general practice of mindfulness that you hear about. Because here, the anchor is actually the fact that you repeat inside, silently, inside yourself, a question. And the question is, what is this? So you sit in meditation, what is this? And personally, I think this is a very useful meditation when we look at letting go. Because in order to let go, in a way, we need to have a choice. And generally, we fix things. We define things. And here, what is this is, I don't know. And so this practice that I learned in the Korean Zen tradition is not a practice of answering. It's a practice of questioning. And actually, the practice is really about the anchoring is asking the question. When you come back to the question, if you are distracted, same way you come back to the whole moment, in the same way it helps you to anchor, in the same way it helps you to be more calm, more spacious. But at the same time, it combines immediately the vipassana aspect, which is to looking deeply experiential inquiry. And here is just in the fact that we are trying to become a question mark, but a stable question mark. So this is not a questioning existential type of questioning where everything becomes too empty and meaningless. This is not what this is about. This is actually what I would call a deep experiential questioning without looking for any answer. So it's just in a way saying to this moment, what is it? So in a way, there is three ways to look at this question. Because often that's what people will ask me. I'm supposed to ask, what is this? But what is this? You know, what am I asking about when I ask, what is this? And there is three ways to look at this. One way is very traditional. And the way they see the question is as turning back the light, the brightness onto ourselves, and in a way asking, what is this being in this moment? So in a way trying to open to our humanity, looking behind how we define and limit it. Because generally I'm like this, I'm like that, when here it's really opening to the whole human being in the moment. That's one way. Another way is actually this has this whole moment. What is this? I mean, you can't define it. This whole moment. I mean, if you wanted in this moment to describe this moment, I would have to describe what I am feeling, what I'm seeing, what each of you is feeling, each of you, and, you know, I mean, it's just for one moment, I might have to write a novel, in a way, you know? So it's really the what is this then, I find myself, it's more like about helping us to open to the moment. What is this? In such a way that we don't grasp at anything, we don't define anything, we don't identify with anything, but we open to the whole moment. Or we can use it in a more vipassana way, inside practice way. Because since you are so used to cultivate awareness, mindfulness, then you're aware of your thought. What is this? You're aware of sensation. What is this? You're aware of a feeling. What is this? And then what is interesting with the questioning in that way is that it helps you to be with the thought, often the thought, the feeling, the sensation in a different way. So that's what I would like you to suggest you, if you want to try that. What you have to be careful with this practice is that we really want to cultivate together stability and openness, quietness and clarity. So to see that it can be actually complementary with the breath, you could start with the breath, so you could in-breath, and on the out-breath you could ask, what is it? That's one method. Another way could be to just ask, what is this? And just stay with that pregnant sensation of perplexity. And then come back to the question. If the words of the question are problematic, you could have different words. Or you could think of it more as becoming a question mark. Because the most important part of the question is actually the question mark. Not the what, not the is, not the this. What is most important is a question mark. So in a way, we're trying to become a question mark within this moment. That's what we're trying to do. But at the same time, what we have to see is that this might not suit everybody in this room. Some people might do it and really like it. Some people might do it. What is this? What is that? Why am I asking this stupid question? You're not obliged to do it. It's just a suggestion. And some people do it. What is this? And then they get a kind of a little feeling of anxiety. So then I would say, don't do it too much, but really do it in coordination, in combination with the breath. So you could just do the breath, you breathe, and then time to time you drop the question, what is this? Or you could do it with the body and just be aware of the body, and time to time, what is this? Or you could do it with a listening meditation, and time to time, what is this? I think it's very important that all these things are tools of awareness, and it's what help us. But the way I would see the questioning, because in the Korean Zen tradition, what you're trying to do is develop a sensation of questioning. And it's actually a bodily sensation of questioning. But you're not trying to force it. In the same way as when you do loving kindness meditation, you're not trying to force feeling love. But you put yourself in that direction. So here we're just trying to go into a questioning direction. But we're trying not to do it with the head. So the one thing we try not to do is to sit there, what is this? What is this? What is this? Not a good idea. And they generally say to bring the question into the belly. So to try to ask the question from the belly. And so you might think, you know, what is this? That's not the idea. That's not the idea. But the idea is actually to bring the energy down. And in the same way, we can in a way look deeply into a sensation in the knee, or when we do the body scanning, we can be aware of the head, aware of different parts of the body. It's kind of, we start with awareness of the belly, of our seat, more like our seat. And then we try to ask the question from there. So that's what, if that makes sense to you, that's what I would recommend. And at the same time, just to, if you find, sometimes people do this question, what is this? And then they have lots of thought coming up. If you have lots of thought coming up, just come back to the breath. Or they do it and then suddenly they have lots of images coming up, or whatever it might be, just either come back to the breath or just let the image come and go as you ask the question. And so, of course, as we do meditation, sometimes we might have a good idea that it be being aware of the breath, that it be being aware of the cultivating the questioning. You must certainly have a good idea, an understanding, an insight. And you can, you know, be aware of that. You can be with that understanding. But then to see that sometimes we see something very clearly and we are in the knowledge of it, in the experience of it, and then the energy of that go, and then we're more in the repetition of it. That was a great insight. I must talk to my friend about it, etc. I must blog about it. I must tweet about it. So in a way is to see that the question, of course, like any practice, can lead to some understanding. And at the same time, when that becomes repetitive and vague, we can come back to the question. So in a way, trying to see, can I find complementarity between my awareness, mindfulness practice, and bringing a little questioning within it. Personally, I did the other way. I went from having 10 years, just do the question, what is this, what is this? And then I made Vipassana, mindfulness meditation, and I tried it, and I thought, that's not a bad idea to do this. And then what I did, what I do often, is I have the question in the foreground, and then I have the sound embedding the question in the environment. Or I have the question in the foreground, in the belly, and then embedded in the breath, for example. So personally, I don't see all these things as being separate. I think over time, as we practice, we make the practice our own, and we find our own way with it. So that's what I want to say. Is it relatively clear, this questioning? Shall we try it out, and then at the end of the afternoon we can discuss it? Okay, so if we just stand up, to just stretch a little.